culture of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, and they'll, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
Welcome into the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi. As a part of this little program here, Bill, I can be followed across all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. And this show could be followed at Pop Culture PD. That's Pop Culture PD. No, we're not the police. We just couldn't fit all the damn characters in Twitter. And you really want to clog up any more characters than that? No. And if you smash that follow button over on Twitter at Pop Culture PD, it will instantly make your return to the world more epic. Speaking of a man that has to return to the world because he gets booted off of Twitter, he's the bad boy of Twitter, Billy Bicep, sometimes can even go by Billy Bi-Weekly Haircut as well. He is at Billy D 24, the word 11. He can be found across, it's not 24. What is it? What is
Bill Yee 2411?
Oh, you changed. Oh, that doesn't make it any easier, but so it's Bill Yee, Y E?
Yep.
2411, the numbers?
Yep.
Okay, that's just on Twitter.
Yep.
And then Billy D 2411 on the others.
Uh huh.
Okay, too confusing. I'm confused. I'm also excited. I'm halfway there. He also can be found, I think, is still at Billy D 2411 over on his OnlyFans. You can check out the bottomless camera during the Pineapple Boys. I heard that Doc is looking to sign up as well. He has shaved downstairs, the thing that says heroes don't do that. So I can get that camera over at Billy D 2411 on the OnlyFans. He is my tag team partner in the podcast sphere. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
That's an OnlyFans team up, me and Dr. Joe, Pineapple Boys. 2 week hiatus, been crazy scheduling wise. So we'll be back full force next week as well. But yeah, Bill Yee in honor of Jesus, because he's king. And then we'll talk about that later. Glad to be back again in the saddle doing some wrestling here. And it's not a bi-weekly haircut, it's a weekly haircut.
Oh, I thought you did every two. So this is every week you get it all cleaned up.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's a good way to budget your money right there. Is that how much is a haircut for you?
With the beard included, I think it's like 28.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No.
Right, listen, you can spend your money on worse. We here, we do have some merch you can check out. If you go over to TeePublic, you can search Pop Culture Pile Driver. If you're looking for it and it's hard to search, just put Pop Culture Pile Driver. You can also check out a lot of the merch for the DSG. Also, that's a chunky
exclamation point.
Oh, that's a chunky with an exclamation point. You can search for all your, I think you should leave, TV show garb, a lot more. I've seen a lot of people, Bill. I feel like a lot of people are catching on with that. That's good to see.
Catching on like wildfire, selling like hotcakes.
Love to see it. Speaking about hotcakes, go to McDonald's. Also, you can check out franksayshi.com. It's our nonprofit tie-in. You can check out all that is going on there, where the funds are going, and some information that'll be coming towards the end of 2021. Are hotcakes the best version of pancakes?
No.
Just what's the difference? I don't understand why they're called hotcakes in one place and pancakes. Isn't it just all the same?
I think it's probably branding, hotcakes and sausage. I don't know. Maybe it flows better than pancakes. Who knows? But chocolate chip pancakes are my treat.
Chocolate chip blueberry is like my number one.
Double?
Them both. Yeah. Because it kind of blends really well. Try it next time. Also, Bill, I had a huge snafu. Almost didn't know if I'd be able to do the pod. Thought I might have to pull a Billy D emergency room or like always injured, because my hand, you can't really tell on screen if you're watching on the YouTube, but I was cooking tonight. And I was cooking, we were making like a taco salad, if you will. Took the ground beef, took it off the skillet, pushed everything over, took just like wraps to make like, you know, you have like the tortilla strips. So I make those out of wraps, just crisp them up on both sides, cut it up, real classy guy. But when I went to put the beef back on the skillet to steam and melt the cheese on, when I did it, full steam went right to my hand when I dropped all the juice and the beef back in. And I'm telling you, this is
tingles. Yeah, your fingertips look a little red.
Yeah, it's bad. I'm not going to lie. It's bad. I think I'm okay. Like, it's not third degree or anything too severe, but the whole thing tingles. And I took a shower, and it was literally the worst feeling.
You got to hold it out there.
I didn't know what to do. It's my right hand, too. It's my main scrubbing hand. So I was just kind of like, It was bad. That was the moral of the story. Don't burn yourself. And if you do, warm water, I mean, sorry, cool water, not cold water.
You know what you got to do is you got to numb that thing up a little bit and then give yourself a stranger.
We're pretty much there. I'll be honest. Right now, it feels like my hand is like yay big. It just feels like this big throb, which that's what happens. Speaking about big throbs, Bill, when it comes to the world of wrestling, there is nothing. I don't know if there's nothing more exciting, but I think it's right up there as the most exciting thing that can happen is a major return of your favorite wrestler.
I would agree. I mean, I think it's probably some of the best moments in wrestling history. It's a lot of fun anytime one of them comes out. And yeah, recently we've had boatloads, like within the last 2 weeks.
The thing we want to try to, you know, differentiate ourselves here and let people know, because you know we're very stringent on rules and we keep things really buttoned up. A return is when it's not a debut. There is a difference between a debut and a return. And even I made a couple of mistakes here, but we'll see kind of as this list goes on if you agree or don't. Or maybe I made a boner, but we'll find out. That's the best part of our lists. But I think a debut is when somebody is – like I'm trying to think because I also put somebody on here now that I think about it, which I could do a switch on the fly. But a return
– our list is a little bit all over the place, but you know what? I like it.
We'll go with that. Screw the rules. Let's just kick it off then, Bill.
It's our own podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want. We can call a one-hit wonder, and some people think it's Blink-182 for all I care.
That's dumb. That wasn't us. That was just on our podcast, unfortunately. But let's kick off the list, Bill. We do the Podcaster's Dozen top 11 because 10 is for fools and 12 just doesn't make any sense. It all started from the IC title top 10. If you want to go back in history, it all happened there. Us and Mac and Goo made some mistakes. So, number 11, Bill, it is the Hardy Boys at WrestleMania 33, 2017.
And you know what's awful? I didn't have this on my list. And you know why? Probably because it dampened it a little bit for me. And I know you were there. I was working. I got home halfway through, scrolling through the gram, saw the Hardy Boys on the gram, and kind of ruined it for me because I was saving it. And normally I'm pretty good about staying off social media because I've worked a lot of Sundays in my lifetime to avoid it.
Sure.
But it ruined it for me. But I'll tell you what, it's an all-time return, and I'm glad I made the list.
I'll say, so the two stories with this, yes, I was there, WrestleMania 33, Orlando, Florida. I think the greatest WrestleMania set of all time with, like, the roller coaster, the globe looked amazing. But here's the funny part, and I know I've told this story before. My wife and I were there, the Din, and we were we were hungry. Like, you have to find breaks. These WrestleManias, we started going at 32, which began the six-hour-long event. So you have to find
age and pretty much WrestleMania, right?
Yes, correct. And you have to find your breaks. Like, you have to find those moments. So once a tag team match, it was going to be a ladder match. I was like, okay, we'll see this match, but we can skip the entrances. So we're going up. There's Gallows and Anderson coming out. There's Cass and Enzo, which had a huge, nice ovation. I'm trying to remember the third team in the match now, which is weird that I can't.
Well, that was the one where New Day was hosting, correct?
They were hosting the event. So then New Day's music hit. We're in line for like another taco salad. And then I did not burn my hand too. And it was really funny because we thought, okay, New Day's going to involve themselves in the match. Then out of nowhere, you just hear this groundswell of kind of like a roar. And I couldn't hear it right away. Then you just...
Oddly enough, they use that in like plow commercials in the area, which is hilarious. But yeah.
It is. Hardcore Holly's old theme, that... That's been used in a ton of national commercials. But dude, I'm sitting there almost... I went nuts. I went absolutely crazy. I was jumping in line. I had a run. I felt like... If you've ever been to like a basketball or sporting event, you're not a wrestling. When something big happens, you thought you could step away. I just darted back into the arena and was like losing my mind with everybody there. Huge, huge return. One of those like in the perfect position because the Hardy Boys, you know, are synonymous with WWE, but for years were TNA bound. And this is during when Matt Hardy, was doing all that with TNA. He left there. He was doing a Ring of Honor earlier in the day, the actual day of that WrestleMania. They were fighting the Young Bucks at some local show. And, well, local, there was like a show in Orlando for them. So really, really epic return, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the better ones at WrestleMania. Probably the only one on WrestleMania on our list.
We got another one.
Spoiler. Oh, that is true. Okay. Well, a little bit of spoiler there. But, you know, a pay-per-view return is a big return in general. So, huge one right there. Glad it made the list. Number 11, great podcaster, doesn't start there.
So then coming in at number 10, here's a semi-controversial one because it could be seen as a debut, but I still look at it more as a return of this gentleman when he came back to wrestling, thought he might have been disenfranchised, almost out of the game for 3 years.
And I'll only give you credit for this one making the list. Again, it didn't make my list, so it must have been decently high on yours, is because you knew of Eric Bischoff beforehand, right? You knew of him in the WWE through the WWE lens, kind of, because it was, you know, either winked at or in some cases, you know, he provoked Vince McMahon, challenging him to a fight. So I'll give you that. Like, Jericho would be in the same vein then, but I think that's completely different because that was a WWE debut as a new character. This was Eric Bischoff returning as Eric Bischoff to a WWE audience, and he's back and better than ever.
What a great theme. I'm back.
But I believe he came back to Back in Black, right? Like, the first night, I think it was Back in Black, and they didn't, like, get licensed for any more than, like, a couple of times.
I'd have to double look. I used to have this one on VHS. Obviously, I burned all those. But yeah, Eric Bischoff, 2002, during when they did the what would then be known eventually as the brand extension, because he became the general manager of Raw. And the great one of Jim Ross's greatest line, hell has frozen over. And Bischoff and McMahon hug on the top of the Raw set. It is one of the more iconic returns just because you never thought you'd see Eric Bischoff back in wrestling. Because think about it. He was kind of cut from WCW in 1999, made a semi-return there in 2000, then just hadn't been heard from, kind of like disenfranchised with wrestling in general. And then boom, there he is, and had quite a little run there with the WWE as the general manager of Raw.
Coming back, hugging Vince McMahon. It was a weird sight. It really was.
Think about this. He hugged Vince McMahon his debut. He kissed Stephanie McMahon on screen, kissed Linda on screen, and had a street fight with Shane McMahon.
Yeah, I mean, he always said, what is it, kids in karate class who are like 5 years old throw a better sidekick than Shawn Michaels. That was, I thought was, that's not the point of his sidekick. But it was a pretty good return. I didn't have it on my list. So right now there's two on my list I didn't even have making our top 11.
And at number nine, another one not on your list, Bill, but 2010, one of the more groundbreaking returns, I would say. It was few years after he was inducted to the Hall of Fame, never actually showed up to the night after for WrestleMania, I believe it was 23, could be wrong, 24, but it is Bret Hart in the debut or the January 1st or the first episode of Raw of January 2010. First time back, music entrance, being in a WWE ring and just was able to talk for like 9 minutes, which was just awesome for wrestling fans.
See, I didn't love this one. I'm not a huge fan of this one. I hated Bret Hart whenever we went to go see him at the mall. I think it was probably a few years before this.
Yes.
I just, you know, once he came back, ever seen one by yourself? Not for me. I mean, it just wasn't for me. Like, I wasn't a huge Bret Hart mark after, like, the 1997, maybe. So, for me, this was just kind of like, eh. I mean, I could see why it made the list. It was kind of huge. You know, Owen had passed between this time and the time he had left the company. So it was momentous in that scenario. But to me, this is just you loving Bret Hart.
It's 13. No, Bill, even if I didn't, even if I wasn't a Bret Hart fan, he has to be on there. 13 years after the most controversial moment in potentially wrestling history with the Montreal Screwjob.
But he was washed up. He didn't wrestle. He didn't do anything.
It didn't matter. He never had set back foot in WWE. We'd never seen him on actual WWE. He was at the Hall of Fame. He got inducted. That did happen. They did release the DVD that you're mentioning when we saw him at Best Buy at the Cambridge Side Galleria. But he never went back into a WWE ring.
And but nobody cares about it. And didn't make any, like, I looked at a lot of lists after I made my list. Not a single one had Bret Hart. I didn't even think of it.
Well, whoever those lists you were reading, the dummies, all right? Because there he is coming in at the greatest list, ours.
You must have had these so high because none of these were on my list. Here's what was this for you?
Yeah, I sent you mine and I sent you what we did together. It's in my emails. Then coming in at number eight, Shawn Michaels in 2002. Shawn Michaels had left the ring in 1998 after back injuries. Went and found his smile, found Jesus, found a lot of things, but came back, Bill, in the summer of 2000. Like, he had been as the commissioner for a little while. He was still in with DX. He interfered in 2000, super kicking The Rock with a match we never saw ever. And then was just kind of like gone. And then the rumor started sparking up that he was going to do a one last final match at SummerSlam 2002 against Triple H. And boy, what a return when the promo, they came out as DX, Triple H hits the pedigree. It was amazing to see getting the band back together. And then what a haul of a match, and maybe the greatest SummerSlam of all time, 2002.
Really was great match. I think this one's dampened a little bit and not high on our list because there was that period of him coming back as the commissioner and the kind of will he, won't he ever wrestle again. And the thing that I like about this return is he had a Hall of Fame career before this and he had a Hall of Fame career after it. So, I mean, one of the more impressive runs of all time is the one after this. And he didn't even take that many titles along the way, probably because they felt that they gave him one, he'd keep it and not want to lose to anybody. Because that's kind of the rap on him. But I really love Shawn Michaels. I love this return. And yeah, it's just dampened because he was kind of like middling in that point. He wasn't like, didn't hear from him back. It was heard from him, commissioner, super kicked a couple people.
Yeah, he was around a lot. But still, like once this actually happened, once the match took place, and once you got that night on Raw when Shawn Michaels said, well, let's do this, let's get the band back together, you felt like, oh, wow, they're gonna do this. And then Triple H turns. It was just such an epic story leading
great
to that
story.
Match.
Yeah. Oh, it was and a fantastic. Great storyline. And you're right. Go back and watch that. I believe it was unsanctioned. Was it unsanctioned at SummerSlam?
It was technically not a real match on the record books.
Yeah, he's wrestling in cowboy boots and little tight jeans. But it was just one of the itty bitty jeans, spiked up hair, chicken spaghetti and chickalinis. It was one of the better matches in SummerSlam history, easily.
And Shawn Michaels is the definition of used to be a piece of shit.
He really did slick though, back hair.
That was slick back. And he was pushed back later.
Back? No, it's slick back.
So coming in now, so Shawn Michaels, 2002 at number 8. Number 7, one that was probably in our early fandom of wrestling, was a guy that you probably like. The way wrestling was in the late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't weekly television radio programming that showed all the main eventers. It was syndicated. You saw jobber matches, interviews with the Hulk Hogans. He wasn't on much Wrestling Challenge or what became Superstars or even Primetime Wrestling. And the number 2 to him for a long time was a guy who stood up Vince McMahon for money several times. Now there's a ward named after him, and he said some really bad things, but that's besides the point. In 1992, WrestleMania 8, in the main event where Papa Shango missed his cue and Sid Vicious had a kick out of the leg drop, the first person to do so, it was then the Ultimate Warrior who came to the rescue, making his return after, I believe it was almost 2 years. It had been a year and change because it was 1991.
Yeah, WrestleMania 6, he was headlined, I believe, right?
Yeah, so six, he faced Macho King. That's when he got rid of Macho King. Oh. 7, he was not, I think the Royal Rumble or Survivor Series 91.
What was Hogan versus Warrior? That wasn't
that was
six?
That was WrestleMania. Oh, you're right, 6.
So what is it? Because 5 was the
We're looking at this backwards. This is 4. Yeah. This is WrestleMania 4. No, wait.
Yeah.
No, this is 6, and it just shows the Warrior in the middle. Because they probably didn't want to put Hulk Hogan on this because WWE pride. Who knows who even licensed this shirt that I'm wearing? But
Target, probably.
Yeah, 6 had the Warrior versus Hogan. Then it was later that year going to Survivor Series. He stood up, left. Mr. Perfect took his place. And then he came back months later here at WrestleMania. The main event, the big shock at the end of the night. Hogan must pose. Warrior must pose. Looking a little bit different, by the way.
Yeah, so this one to me gets our historical award. And man, your fingers, you're blowing on those fingers, man.
These things are, this is bad.
Getting burnt does suck. And Vince McMahon got burnt by this guy quite a few times. And they all got burnt by friggin' Papa Shango, who, why would you put him in the main event anyways? But shout out to what's his name there?
Charles.
The Godfather.
Yeah, whatever his real name.
The Supreme Fighting Machine, he's a great guy. But yeah, to me, I really would like to ask somebody who was like 20 at this time what it meant to them. Because to me as a kid, it wasn't really like... Like, I was like, oh, cool, really the Ultimate Warrior was back. But you didn't really realize he was gone, especially the way they booked TV back in the day. You would sometimes not see Bret Hart for 3 weeks at all. And then he'd come out, deliver a promo, and beat up a jobber on Superstars. So it wasn't so out of the ordinary, but I think historically we have to give this credit because it was the Ultimate Warrior. He was returning in the main event of WrestleMania. Pretty big deal.
And we'll tie in, we'll go over some of the stuff that's going on current day in wrestling. But, like, sometimes that is the most impactful way to make it is – post the main event. And yeah, it is really weird to look back and think Papa Shango was supposed to play a bigger role there and never really, I don't even know if he ever had, I don't think he ever had a WrestleMania match.
Papa Shango. No. 1992, it was a different time. He was doing all that voodoo stuff.
Yeah, and then he became Karma, the fight machine. And man, talk about a man, what a versatile.
Monster of a man.
Absolutely. You should always go back and watch the Dark Side of the Ring about the Brawl for All. He talked a lot about that. Charles Wright is the name. All right. Now, coming in at number six, almost halfway through this list, we both had different Stone Cold. So I just said, screw it. We're putting them both on there. It all equals the same. You had it for 2000. I had from 2003. Bill, why don't you go through the 2000 return of Stone Cold Steve Austin?
I mean, it was just him actually coming back, right? So it was
post-injury.
Yeah, post-injury. So it's just one of the returns that, you know, you thought that this guy might be done. And at the time, he was, I think, is he still the biggest pay-per-view draw of all time?
I think technically John Cena and The Rock, when they broke all the records, they did it twice. It all depends on where you want to go with that. I would say at the time, there was nobody bigger than Stone Cold Steve Austin, even though in his absence, The Rock had became a mega star due to Triple H as the heel. But I think those guys kind of took it. But yeah, Stone Cold, I think, is like a singular draw. Like, he was facing The Undertaker, Mick Foley. You wanted to see what Stone Cold was doing.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it was around this time, probably 21 years ago. So his return can drink. I think it was late September. He just strolls out on Raw, and it's one of the greatest pops you'll ever hear. I mean, he had the greatest pop anyways, just regularly, because he's Stone Cold. But, you know, he was arguably the brightest star to burn the shortest ever. I think he has the best compact run of all time. The 2003 one, that was just as a general manager, though, right?
No, so the 2001 that you're talking, there's almost like twofold. One, at Backlash, when he actually returned during what was The Rock versus Triple H in a Iron Man match, he comes out, nobody was, he was expected to be there, you just didn't see, he comes out just wailing on every McMahon. He actually gets The Rock disqualified, and in Triple H, I believe, retains. But then there's, that was The Undertaker, but Stone Cold had done that. And then later in the year, what you're talking about is when we found out Rikishi did it, and he did it for The Rock. And then Stone Cold returned again the next week, and that started his actual return to regular in-ring action. So he had a massive 2000 of just returns, had a crazy match against...
The Backlash one, I always get confused, because he just comes out with a chair and starts swinging, right?
Yeah, just looking, no offense, I'm looking a little fat, too.
Yeah, and he's hobbling.
Yes, because his legs and his whole back, everything was all screwed up. The one I was talking about is when... So in leading up to 2002 King of the Ring, he wanted to, you know, Vince wanted them to lose to Brock Lesnar in an unadvertised match. He said, took his ball, went home. The Confidential episode on WWE back in the day where the famous Stone Cold took his ball and he went home, like kind of like a Brett screwed Brett. And then we didn't hear from Stone Cold for nearly 8 months. And then eventually the story goes, Jim Ross got, I think they were in Amarillo, Texas, got Vince and Stone Cold together. He actually returned at No Way Out to face Eric Bischoff in his, weirdly enough, one of his last matches ever. He faces Eric Bischoff. The next month is him versus The Rock 3 at WrestleMania 19, never to be seen again. But that just lead up to Stone Cold come back, because we were done with him as wrestling fans. We didn't know he would, like, all the other times we knew, like with the one you're talking about, like there was injuries. You would expect him to come back. They did a big storyline. Who hit Stone Cold? This was just Stone Cold took his ball, went home. Rock cut a promo on him, basically saying, if you're not going to, don't want to play, beat it. And then we were off, done. We just had The Rock for the rest of 2002. Shawn Michaels return, Triple H, all the things that happened, and you're just like, okay, Brock Lesnar, obviously his tear, and Kurt Angle, and then out of nowhere, yep, Stone Cold's coming back, and it was electric. And yeah, like I said, it was weird against Eric Bischoff, but hey, whatever. And then got his final match just a month later. Just a weird time.
It's just such an odd run, and people put him as one of the all-time greats, and you can put him on the Mount Rushmore, obviously, because it's synonymous. You know, he's doing commercials still to this day. He's still pop culturally relevant. But when you really look at his run, it's even shorter than The Rock's.
Yeah, because he started in 96. 96 to 98 was middling, as we know. Like 97 is when it really started. Him and Bret Hart, that really got the Stone Cold character to where it is. And it really went 97 to 2000.
Yeah.
And then there's the breaks in like 2001, obviously, he had the Rock, all the stuff that happened there. And then, again, he leaves in mid-2002. But 2002 was kind of a weird year for him. And so, yeah, like him at the peak top, you're right. It was really like about a 3.5-year stretch of like unbelievable top guy stuff and just incredible creative at the time as well.
Yeah, and honestly, my favorite part of Stone Cold's run is his IC run. That's my favorite. I loved him versus The Rock. Yeah,
the end of 1997. There's just some, obviously, and it's insane that that even happened because you have to remember all the injuries we're talking about. The reason this was all cut short,
Owen Hart,
is because he busted his neck. He could have been dead in the ring. Thankfully, he wasn't. Thankfully, he wasn't paralyzed, and he didn't miss all that much time when you go back and watch.
No, I mean, and literally, he could have. Yeah, he was, not feeling from the waist down or neck down after that move. And you go back and watch how he delivered that pile driver to a lot of guys. Very similar. Like, he was a great worker, but that pile driver, very dangerous. Anytime he ever broke it out, not good.
No, it's always the pile driver really is a dangerous move. Like, that's why Jerry Lawler.
But he did it reversed. He did it like a tombstone. That's so why you couldn't sink your back into it like everyone else does. So when you do a pile driver, you're supposed to like collapse your butt into the guy's chest. So you don't have, like, it's just like taking a regular bump.
Your shoulders are just supposed, like, your butt, is, I mean, you're sorry, your head's supposed to rest in between their thighs so that if any contact, it's just your shoulders hitting their upper thighs.
Yeah, so, like, he delivered it like a tombstone, but, dropped to his butt instead of his knees.
Yeah, it was, it's ugly, it's hard to watch still, but it is crazy, too, because Stone Cold was also on the next night's Raw. If there's ever, if you're a wrestling fan, you're listening to this, you have a little bit of lapse, and you're intrigued by all what's going on, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Watch just some 1997 Raws. Like, talk about just insane television. And, like, you could just tell no scripts. Like, they knew where they were going, how much time. But these guys just went out there, and it's just insane. You could just tell, literally, it lives up to the name of Raw. It felt as raw as anything you've probably ever seen in wrestling history. Made WCW look scripted. So that's Stone Cold, kind of a 6A, 6B, 2000, 2003. Bill, now we're getting into some of the heavy hitters.
This is, like, to me, a real list.
So the top five, I think, is untouchable. And, we'll go over some honorable mentions as well. But I think it's really hard to touch the top five here. Number five, which this – I think any of these could be number one or number five. So coming in at number five based on our rankings, it is from the Royal Rumble 2020, the return we both talked about on this podcast over a year and a half ago, saying we really didn't want, because we didn't want to see less than what he was, but he came back, and I think he's done a hell of a job realistically. It's Edge in the epic return at the Royal Rumble.
And this got everybody excited. 2020, a lot of our friends are two decades-ish removed from wrestling, and this got the blood flowing, if you will, for a lot of fans. And certainly for me, at this time, I was a little more tapped into wrestling, and he came back. He looked as good as he ever had. Super cut up, carved ham, carved beef,
he's just, definitely a goose that
carved time. Up. Yeah, he was goosed up. But it was just, and his music slams,
It's it won our best entrance music of all time. It is arguably one of the most, best way to combine a real song. Because sometimes when you do the real songs that are not popular songs, you're kind of like, where did this come from? But, Alter Bridge, complete shout out to them. Probably still getting tons of fans to love them. Obviously, it was basically Creed with just a different singer. But, still had the "You Think You Know Me." And then,
on this day.
And I remember when it happened.
You could see he was emotional, too. That's what I love about these.
I love Edge. I do. And listen, who am I to talk? Look at me. But the man looked like a skeleton for that first few minutes, because he looked like and CM Punk recently talked about this, and we'll talk about him. We'll talk about some AEW stuff. But that his face, you just said, Bill, no, it was emotional. I think he was I don't want to say the word scared, because that's not right. But something happened to him. You could just, if you watch his face there.
He was overtaken by emotion.
It would literally, I think he had an out-of-body experience.
Yes, 100%. I did.
I think a lot of us did. His music hit. He looked like he ran out. It almost looked like his soul came out of him.
Yeah.
And finally came back. He poised himself in awful doing by the camera crew, because then he speared maybe the greatest seller in the company right now, Dolph Ziggler, and you didn't see it on camera. But that return, like we said, I didn't want it for him. I didn't want it because I'm like, oh, what are we doing?
I didn't either. But you know what? That I think what made it better is because I didn't have an expectation on it. I didn't really want it. I wasn't feeling it. And then the moment still happened, and you were like, nope.
Great
they
call.
Hit it. They did it. Good call. It was the right way to call. Go. Home run. Because he also delivered. He also looked good, and he wrestled well. Like, everything was
matches perfect. Since. His matches since he got injured again, so you could technically he returned again this year's Royal Rumble, oddly enough, and then won the son of a gun from the one spot, which will probably go down as the worst one spot win in history. All due respect to Shawn Michaels, because it'll just be forgotten. But he really does look great. Like, in the ring, he's now currently in a feud where we're recording in September of 2021, like, against Seth Rollins, which is, like, a pure match made in heaven with their styles. It was a match we both talked about on the list that we thought we wanted to see. But when he just came back, though, you're right. It just ignited something.
Electric. Absolutely electric.
And don't forget also, this wasn't a number 30 spot return where everyone kind of is expecting something to happen. He came in at like 21 or something, which I think personally was made it 10 times more special.
Yeah, because you had a feeling it might happen, but you figured, 30, predictable, easy, just boom, 21, cool. And then, doesn't even win it.
No. That was the other thing. And he was the second to last man, obviously, where Drew McIntyre was able to get his victory. Actually, sorry. It was third to last because Roman Reigns, of course, has to be in there for that spot because people cheer the other guy. But made a star. And again, very underrated, great Royal Rumble match. Now coming in at number four. Don't forget, this also, hold on, just to go back to Edge. This is 8 years. 8 years after not seeing a man who had to retire because of
after WrestleMania.
Yeah, he fought WrestleMania 27. Then he had like two little matches that nobody talks about, but then had to retire. One of the more emotional Raw promos of all time. It still was weird because the internet was a thing. Obviously, Twitter was out there, but not like it was with some of the stuff we're going to be talking about where it was inklings or notions that this was like, it was emotionally sad. I was never the biggest Edge guy. I almost missed it and was foolish.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I think you fucked up this list again.
No, I didn't. Don't worry, I didn't.
I think you did.
I did not.
I think you had to have.
I promise you, I did not.
All right.
Where did you have Edge?
No, so that's not it.
Edge where? Before this? Nope. Or going ahead?
Mm-mm.
Well, I can tell you, Edge in the next one tied. Number three was ahead of them both, and then the top two tied.
Okay.
Is that what you're confused about?
No.
What are you confused? Something that already happened?
No.
What are you doing?
Do you have my list?
Yeah, I have your list.
Can you send me my list? I don't have my phone with me.
Jesus, why do I have to send you your list in the middle of the show, Bill? I think if you look at the email I sent you.
I don't see it.
I sent you two emails. The first one I sent you should have it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you fucked up.
I don't think I did.
I think you did.
I still don't believe you. Right. Still don't believe you. Hold on, let me see. Oh, I did.
Yep.
I definitely did. So now I know what you're talking about. Well, we'll fit it in here. Now coming in at number four. That's actually really funny of you. Yes, Tyler Rader, this is live. That's the greatest comment ever. Tyler Rader, is this live? Yep, that's how we do podcasts, boys. We live on the edge. Now we're going back to top. This could be a top 13 because we have two Stone Colds in there. So, well, number four, after, to me, still one of the few times I recent memory have legitimately cried watching wrestling was Daniel Bryan having to announce his retirement in 2016. It's still something that I have difficulty, 2015, whichever it was. I still have difficulty watching that Raw. It was tough. And the story that came out, Bill, is where Vince McMahon basically told him he had to retire because they were in Washington and this was the time to do it. They weren't going to clear him. There's a lot of stories there. He's going to be talked about a little bit later as well. But this was like, no. As a wrestling fan, I remember this was leading to WrestleMania that I was attending at WrestleMania 32. This was 2016 now, I remember. And I thought I was going to have Daniel Bryan's return, main event, biggest WrestleMania. Because don't remember, just 2 years before, headlined WrestleMania 30.
Probably one of the greatest main events in history.
Oh, yeah. And story, it's just weird when you look. So WrestleMania 10 was the dawning of Bret Hart and that new kind of era. WrestleMania 20, they give it to Chris Benoit, which still to this day is a little weird, not because of what happened. I just never saw him that way. But again, him and Eddie Guerrero at the end of the night, kind of dawning of a new day.
Yeah, they figured out, hey, these guys can wrestle. Let's give them the straps.
Yes, and like this is what fans are looking for. 10 years later, we get Daniel Bryan, the entire wrestling community, everybody that's a diehard wants this guy's success to happen. He had had such a great story that they didn't even want to tell, and he gets to the top. And then I'm just interested what we're going to get at WrestleMania 40, especially now what's going on in the landscape. But Daniel Bryan then has to retire. But Bill, 2 years later, as we lead to WrestleMania 34, it was announced all over the place. That's why this one's a little bit different, because it was basically said like he was cleared. People magazine were saying it.
It's pretty emotional still.
Oh, it is. But it was a weird one because he basically comes out, doesn't kind of promo about returning. It was kind of like, you know, he talked a lot. Then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn come out, attack him. You see him kind of yes up, nails them both. Kind of like an initiation to say he's returned. It didn't like a fit. He never said he's returning, but that was the night that it started, led to his match at WrestleMania 34, where if you actually watch that back there again in attendance, he sat on the floor for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was poorly booked. But nonetheless, it's just what it meant. This Edge coming back from his injury, Daniel Bryan from like what was known as he was having epilepsy issues and concussions and just his brain couldn't return. And then he also ended up eventually having that great promo talking about returning and fight for your dreams so your dreams fight for you. All these great lines. So Daniel Bryan, again, very emotional situation.
Yeah, and one of my buddies recently came out as a Daniel Bryan hater, and I have to identify him as the first. Who hates Daniel Bryan? Like, who hates this guy? I could see maybe being like, oh, he's too small to be a champion or something like that, but this guy is one of the most charismatic people in the history of professional wrestling. He made you love him. And the guy, his argument is he hates the yes chant. How can you hate the yes chant? He's one of the greatest heels in his short run that he had as a heel. Put Kofi over in the same scenario that he was. Now he's in AEW. What a return. Technically return. That's a return as well, because people knew who he was in that scenario. That's what I consider these things too, is are people aware of you? Like AJ Styles to WWE, that was an introduction to an American audience. To me, if you go into WWE, that's a debut rather than a return for the most part, except for Eric Bischoff. You know, again, this list's all over the place, especially since we forgot probably my favorite of all time. But nevertheless, Daniel Bryan, you know, he flirted with it a couple times. He came out at one of the events we were at, and I thought he was going to attack Bo Dallas, was going to attack him. Great moment for me seeing Bo Dallas, but he is just one of the most beloved people in professional wrestling. Just because he's such a great all-time human being. Like, he's not even a character. He's Daniel Bryanson. Bryan Danielson. Michael Hickenbottom. Whatever the hell you want to call him. But, like, he is just such a delight to watch in the ring, on the mic, as a heel, as a face.
And I think, honestly, like, me and you kind of have different opinions on a lot of things, especially wrestling. And not all the time. We agree on a lot as well.
Oh, this guy's top-notch. One of the best ever.
The thing is, he checks the boxes. He is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Definitely one of the greatest wrestlers of this generation. He is, like, his mic work, he doesn't need to be, like, the criticism that we'll have for, like, a Bret Hart in the early, mid-90s is because he was kind of, it was a weird time for, like, promos. Like, you came from Hulk Hogan and all the coked-out promos we were getting from all those big baby faces to a more calm, subdued, somebody just saying, like, hey, I'm the best. And, like, you weren't used to that. So, like, he stinks on the mic. Even though it's not necessarily true. Then we got into the Attitude Era. What I love about Daniel Bryan, as a heel, as a face, which is another part, he did both excellent. He was headlining what would have been WrestleManias. He could have headlined multiple, with one being a baby face, one being a heel, 3 years apart. 5 years apart. And the thing is that the things he says, they feel like they mean something. It feels real. He doesn't feel like he's reading a script or he's saying that. Even with him and Kane, when you saw like the comical side, like that worked because you're like, I just like this guy. He looks likable. He feels likable. Every time he's in the ring, he's the wrestler you want to watch. And he grew from like a gym that me and you played basketball in as kids.
Yeah. And this is why I hate P.S. Michael Hayes. Because he said, you don't want to see your next door neighbor wrestler. And that was the philosophy that he grew up under. So he's like, I'm going to take that philosophy with me for ever. And that's kind of what kept Daniel Bryan back for so long, because he is our height. You know, he's like 5'10". You know, he put on a lot. He's muscular as hell now, but he's not an overwhelming figure in the ring. But his personality, the way he interacts with the crowd, it's just natural charisma that oozes out of him. You know, he just has that, and you don't have to necessarily be big. You just have to be captivating, and he is captivating.
And he never, and another thing, and I think now in wrestling where everything, the mystique's kind of gone, is that he never's been afraid to take a three count. He's never been afraid to lose. He's never thought.
All of the best wrestlers have the most title losses because they are willing to give it up. And I think that's why they don't mind putting the belts on those guys. That's why John Cena has dropped the title 16 times. That's why Ric Flair has dropped the title 16 times. That's why Daniel Bryan has more championships than probably Shawn Michaels did. Well, I'm going to have to look it up.
I don't know. I don't know if he does. But the more important of that, though, but like guys like Adam Cole, when there was like a situation, when they were doing the NXT, like that Survivor Series, he took a loss to Adam Cole on a Friday night SmackDown because he didn't go to Saudi Arabia and WWE got stuck in Saudi Arabia because of all the BS going on there. Like that Friday night SmackDown, if you go back and watch when Triple H is on commentary, Adam Cole was like a call. They had to re-scramble everything. Adam Cole pins Daniel Bryan in the main event, which earlier, then he faces like Seth Rollins a week later and Seth Rollins a champion and it's a DQ. Like Daniel Bryan's like, I'll take a pin because it's going to make you look better beating someone like me. And that's why like people like him being in a successful position is great. You mentioned the Kofi Kingston, like Kofi against, I'm just looking back at that roster at the time, a heel, even like Kevin Owens, it's not going to hit the same way. It's going to be great, but we knew what Daniel Bryan was. They reversed the story on him, and Daniel Bryan was such a great, hateable heel. So there is Daniel Bryan. So coming in now at number three, Bill, I believe this was your number one return. Swept this one. 2008, another Royal Rumble. This is out of the 30 spot. Just what, 90 days after like tearing?
Nobody thought it was happening.
Nobody. He tore his rotator cuff in late 2007. They were saying 9 months to a year. It wasn't a fallacy. It's just this man literally may be a robot. He may be made of.
Yeah. Cena. I mean, he coming out at this point, everyone hated him too. He was the baby face nobody loved. The crowd would boo him. You can't wrestle. All of that stuff. Cena sucks. And you know what? I forget who said it, but like it doesn't matter. Like, you were a John Cena fan at that moment because it was just so fucking cool. It was a great building. Madison Square Garden, was it? Yep. Did they have it? It wasn't the taxi cab, right? But they came out of that shitty entrance that was featured in the main shot that's never, ever featured in the main shot. Made it even all the more cool. He comes out, hands down, head down, and he even knows when he picks his head up. He's smiling ear to ear because he can feel it. And he's trying to play it cool. He's not trying to be like Edge, but he knows that this is an all-time moment because nobody likes him as a babyface, and the whole place shook.
Yeah, if you look at his 2007, this is a guy who, you know, had the one-night stand where Rob Van Dam beats him because he was put also
– he threw his shirt in the crowd. Somebody wiped his ass with it. After he throws it in three times. Third time, guy wipes his ass with it and throws it back.
You said like his 2007 is one of the worst booked babyface runs because everything he
goes to
guys like Edge, who was super cool. Like this was the beginning of the heels being like super, super cool because John Cena was too cut and dry, too clean.
When you heard the "Let's Go Cena," it was all kids and women. And then the "Cena Sucks" was all men. And it was hilarious. Let's go Cena. Cena sucks. It was amazing.
And I will never forget.
I hated him.
Oh, I always chanted both. I always chanted both. I loved it. That was where like just chanting was insane. I think people now it's like known, but like we were talking about 08, 07, 08, 09, like that singing both, like it was just in chorus. Let's go Cena sucks. I was screaming everything. I was having a ball. But yeah, John Cena 2008 does return, wins this Royal Rumble as well, goes on to be one of the poorest WrestleMania like Royal Rumble, because I think that was the one where it was Big Show, him, and Edge. I think that was weird. I think that was the one. But yeah,
to me, the greatest return of all time by the greatest wrestler of all time.
Not for me. Not neither one of those. Even though John Cena, it's hard to argue, may not be the greatest wrestler because he has just done so damn much. Like the man, literally, you talked about Stone Cold run. Like Cena was 2000, basically in three, like he started, but 2004
took 17, 18,
like, 16, like strong. That's like he went a strong 10. Over a decade of strong
14 years.
And think about, we're also talking about a guy who just helped make SummerSlam a huge event by having a dream-ish match, main event match at least, against Roman Reigns in 2021, which would then be almost 20 years later.
And so, I'll have one more good title run in him, I'm sure.
We'll see. That's what's going to get interesting. So now we'll do some honorable mentions. We'll go through my F up and we'll go to your finisher here. But Bill, some of the honorable mentions, you had Chris Jericho in 2007.
I mean, Chris Jericho's come back many iterations. I think his AEW thing, not really, he's just in a new company. So, but Chris Jericho, you could even mention him coming into WWE. That's definitely a debut though.
Yeah.
I think you have him as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. He's definitely
it's going to be hard.
Top 11 all time for me.
Yeah. It's going to be hard for people to argue against him being one of the greatest because of all the evolutions and things that he's done. But the 2007 one, that was when he, shirt and tie, clean, crisp. This was his first technical return when the Save Us Y2J. People thought, and this is when he had no entrance music for a little while. He had the what is known as the Nick Bockwinkle like character, spoke differently. He also had the great, I really liked his return, what would be in 2012 when he
was the Bray one.
It was when he came out with the lights, but he never spoke. He just wouldn't say anything. He'd come out, people would cheer, and he'd just say, come on, and then he'd cheer, and then he'd just leave, leading to eventually him versus CM Punk at WrestleMania, lost to Sheamus in the final two of the Rumble. But Jericho has had a couple of returns like that I've always enjoyed his work. So that's a good one. Here's one that I didn't even really think of. And when I saw it on your list today, because I never opened your email because I was too scared to I was officially done. I always wait for the day of. You had X-Pac in 1997, which is such a good call because technically X-Pac is a debut, but this is the 1-2-3 kid, Sean Maltman, who had departed from WWE 2 years earlier.
Yeah, and it was a good one. Like, you were excited to see him come back. I mean, it was at the prime of my peak wrestling watching career, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty fucking cool. He's a guy that, I loved. I mean, the 1-2-3 kid, as goofy as he was, it was a great return.
Yeah, and this was also the night after WrestleMania. This is when the night after WrestleMania really became – this is, like, I think the first one that was, like, a big deal because this was the debut of, Sean Wall, X-Pac coming into DX, then later in the night, the New Age Outlaws. 12, you had Mankind debuting. There was definitely, like, in Mark Marrow, but it was never, like, that monumental the next night. Then you had so we both had our different Ric Flairs on our list. You had WWE
2001.
Yeah, in 2001. I had when he went back to WCW in 1993 after he
That's a pretty good one, yeah.
That's the one that like still to this day, like that whole time, I don't see enough documentation on that. I watch a lot of YouTube stuff, but don't forget, he came to WWE with the WCW belt. And then he, really didn't love his time here. Then goes back to WCW. It's just very strange. And when he went back, that's when Hogan came in and they got to have those matches they weren't able to have in WWF. I had The Rock in 2011 also on my list. That was him to host WrestleMania 27. Roman Reigns in 2019. I'm in remission, y'all. One of the more, again, emotional moments. Still felt like it was a little rushed. We talked about that in previous podcasts that Roman would have been a great save for the following years, Royal Rumble. Little did we know, obviously, the pandemic was coming around the corner. But
it's amazing the career he's already had. And he's what? Is he 30 yet?
I think he's like 32.
Is he really?
He's older. He might. I'll look it up just while we have
this. You know what? He is a little older because he had like that Rock kind of career where he didn't do this as his first. He's 36.
36. But Bill, you say 36.
That's a baby in wrestling years because you can wrestle till you're 45 now.
We're WrestleMania 37, he headlined. 6 years ago when he was 30, he headlined WrestleMania 31. So yeah. Take it all into like consideration. And don't forget, he also got his cancer peaked back up here in 2018. He leaves WWE and then he comes back. And it really wasn't all that long after when he then went into the feud with Drew McIntyre for WrestleMania 35 that everyone forgets. And this whole situation's kind of forgot. But that promo, I'm in remission, y'all. Everybody was excited. Like, that was a great moment for him and kind of really changed the narrative for Roman Reigns. Also, the other return, he did technically return last year in 2020 at Survivor, I'm sorry, at SummerSlam to become a heel, which also could have made this list. The last one, I had NWO. That's a big no-no because that was technically a debut for NWO. But Hulk Hogan and all that. And the only one I didn't mention, Bill, was Shane McMahon a few years ago. Yeah. That was huge. But that was
I loved return. It, but yeah, then he turned out to be the worst.
Well, that later, but that return itself was crazy. So here we go with some screw ups here. We'll just kind of get it out of the way.
He would have been 3 or 4. He would have been 3 or 4. Maybe 5.
I'll tell you right now what he would have been. He would have been
5.
I had him at 8, so he would have been 6 technically, but doesn't matter about.
He was my 2.
I know he was my 8. Sorry. But anyways, that is Triple H's return at Madison Square Garden in 2002. Oh, why is this epic? Because I did this. And two, because Triple H was the heel of all heels, hated. People hated John Cena.
Yeah, this is the opposite of John Cena because he was a heel that was actually hated instead of a babyface that was hated.
But he was also hated because people believed he was getting preferential treatment. He was running Raw. Kind of was.
He kind of was.
Pritchard's told. Like, he basically kind of pulled and, I don't want to lose to this guy. I don't want to do this. Like, he was pulling all the strings, pulling all the things that people hated. Then tears his quad after WrestleMania 17 and one of the most oddly booked times history, misses the whole invasion storyline, which in the long term, probably a godsend, comes back, Bill, 2002, looking like me and you put together, but all muscle.
He was all leather. Like, he was wearing a leather jacket and you could see his biceps, his triceps, his traps, his shoulders. He looked like a like Hulk Hogan times 2. He was monstrous. It was a great ovation. The whole place went banana land. It was one of the best returns of all time. I remember it to this day. It's just such a cool moment in wrestling history to see this guy come out. You know, he had great theme music too. I think that plays a big part in a return to when you hear that music strike. And for me, it was before the internet because I didn't know this was coming. So
no, technically it was just, you did. No, this is why mine doesn't have it as high because it wasn't a shock return. They actually announced it ahead of time. And there's a great video package that played in the beginning of that Raw that like led up to it. They did. They announced it.
I don't remember it then.
Yeah. 2 weeks before they said like Triple H's return. Then they did it like the next week. But something about that though, I kind of liked, I took it down to the points for the overall, but like the impact that had at the end of that night with Kurt Angle in the ring. And he just destroys him. And again, total credit to Kurt Angle for the sales job here. Looked like he was horrified, but you got to watch. There's a video on YouTube of like Triple H return package. It's like some slow song. I forget what it is now. It's a popular song from the time, but amazing stuff. Triple H, just unreal.
Good and if we ever we haven't done entrances of all time yet, right?
No, we did entrances, Bill.
We did. Where did we put him? Pretty high. Yes, we did. We had him pretty high.
I believe he was 2 or 3. The Brood got number 1. And so funny that Edge recently came back as the Brood. Check it out in the archives. Search Pop Culture Pile Driver on your podcast.
We're at like, what, 150 of these?
123. So we are now at the top 2-ish. Number 2, recency bias? I don't think so.
It was one of the greatest pops. It was insane. It was his hometown. CM Punk, what a debut. What a re-debut. What a return. I mean,
everything.
He was a lot to us, and we thought it would never happen.
Yeah, so many things we can break down with this, but to keep it as brief as I can, it was 2000, when ECW debuted on WWE programming, I think they did that show. I want to say 2006, yeah. 5 or 6. I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm not Googling it. But both of us talked about that first episode, CM Punk, just the look, the feel, the everything about him, like, ooh, this guy's got something.
Everything but the elbow drop.
Well, we didn't do it at that time. But when that first one debuted, there was a lot of reasons to watch. One was Kelly Kelly in the expose, which those were very good times, YouTube it. And then there is CM Punk, who felt different. Felt like that's what gravitated me towards him. And we talked a lot about that. And then they pulled
him. He kept me in wrestling. And wrestling was really, this is one of the darkest times in the history of wrestling.
Yeah, and it's so weird how we vision things and other people, like some people think the last year was the darkest. Some people think 2016.
Well, pandemic's a little bit different, and yes, that
literally was the darkest.
Yeah, I think right before the Attitude Era for WWE was pretty bad. This was right up there though, because there was nothing. There was no Stone Cold. You know, there was no The Rock. It was Kurt Angle.
Cena was in his swing.
But Cena was still like not nobody liked him. He was the baby face that nobody liked.
He was the guy though.
He was the guy, but it wasn't like teenagers at the time were embracing John Cena.
True, but I don't know if teenagers have embraced anybody since. But the thing with CM Punk was he was different, looked different, felt different. Then they bring him over to Raw years later, and he cashes in Money in the Bank twice. He becomes that guy. We were excited. And then he becomes the man in 2010, 2000 with the Straight Edge Society, 2011. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the story there with the pipe bomb story, Summer of Punk that got completely destroyed. Then the long title reign. Then he's out the door in 2014 at the Royal Rumble, which leads to Daniel Bryan. And disenchanted with wrestling, destroys the company, basically kind of craps on wrestling fans. Wrestling yeah. as a thing, but he did this because it's the way maybe some of us would talk about a bad relationship or something because you loved it, but things change.
He Bret Harted it. He was pissed. He hated the business. He hated everybody in the business. He let everybody know about it. He was a big crybaby. I still don't love him ever like I will. Like, same thing with Bret Hart. Like, he was such a baby about it that I kind of hate him for it. But there's no denying he can still do it. Like, Bret Hart, you know, Goldberg basically ruined his career. He was never the same after that. So
it's bitterness. It's bitterness, right? Yeah. Like, you're still like, bitter.
He can still kind of go. And, you know, he had the UFC career, which, you know, people will say it was terrible, but they booked him not like a new guy. They booked him against young up-and-comers to give them a name because they were like, this guy probably isn't going to stick around or do well, so we're going to feed him to the lions that are coming up here. So and again, he kind of got a raw deal there, but like his return, it shut down the AEW website for T-shirt sales. He sold the most T-shirts, you know, in wrestling history ever in one night or whatever the hell it was. So,
yep.
I mean, this guy's return was huge because he was gone for 7 years.
7 years, never in anything wrestling. There's one video of him potentially doing something. I forget some promotion that was shutting down, but it was wearing a hood. You didn't see who it was. Came back to backstage for WWE, but everyone thought, oh, he's going to segue into WWE. It was a Fox deal. He's now talked about it. Never once was contacted by anybody from WWE. It's total Fox move. And then we saw him back in a ring at that Rampage, the first dance a few weeks ago. Now he fought Darby Allin.
Don't give me that. It was a Fox deal. Did he not know it was a WWE show?
No, he knew that, but he never is.
I know, but
he paid through
Fox. I know. Nah, even still, doesn't matter. He did WWE stuff. I know. Of course he said that because he's the most bitter person in the world. He's never given an ounce of credit to the WWE, but like, don't give me that. Don't give me that.
Whatever. But yes, he. Whatever. You can believe what you want to believe.
It was WWE. Fun. He went back to WWE. It happened. He was on WWE television.
True. That is true. So he, returns to wrestling, as he liked to call it. Great promo. Everything about what he said. One of the more perfect promos, I think, because, yes, he kind of
badmouthed. He was biting.
Yeah, but he didn't say their name. He wasn't overly rude. He just kind of avoided it.
Passive aggressive, like every ex-girlfriend's ever been.
Yeah, but I love the line of, like, if anything I've done over the last 7 years had made you like unhappy with my decision, because people wanted him back in WWE.
Yeah.
And one of the best things he did was he acknowledged the CM Punk chant, because that's all you heard. And I hated it. I resented fans when they chanted CM Punk. Like, just like what you're seeing, find a way to like something. But they always did it. And now that's hopefully now gone. But he said, like, I heard you. I heard you. And all I ever wanted to do was change things. And then when he said, like, I couldn't get healthy at the place that made me sick. If that doesn't touch you somewhere, because we've all been there, relationship, work, whatever, like, goddamn, that hit me like a freight train. I was like, damn, okay.
That's a good line.
It was. And it was true. I think that's what he really meant. And I don't think he meant the sickness that we've heard about in the Colt Cabana podcast. I think he literally meant like he felt unhealthy.
Yeah, I mean, he's bashed WWE from pillar to post for years, saying their name, saying, you know, and I agree with him.
The doctor's names, lawsuits.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And he said stuff that I agree with, like, WWE is the best big budget movie you've ever seen with the worst script writing. I mean, that's how I've described it forever. They have the best production value in every aspect except writing. And probably the most critical part of storytelling is the fucking writing. So they failed at it for years. He's in a place now where, you know, there was four other returns that night. Or, well, you know, technically a debut, but two debut. Well, whatever you want to call it. Ruby Riott, Bebe.
Yeah, his first match against Darby Allin, which I thought was a chew-in for a main event, did not main event. Third to last. Nice match. Looks good. Looked like he's having fun. Yeah. But then, yeah, on a night, they get Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole, Ruby Soho, and there was obviously some New Japan tie-ins as well. The internet was ablaze, but CM Punk back in wrestling is good for wrestling, and I'm really excited about it. And I'm happy that people, you know, we can say the word wrestling, and it doesn't sound like a dirty word. But Bill, the number one return.
This, to me, is still
the reason I put this at number one is because CM Punk is one of the biggest returns of all time, but it just happened, and it's going to take a little bit of time to see the ripple effect. So I think that it's with these two tied because of the rankings between us. But give this one the edge because I had it as my number one. 2012, night after WrestleMania 28, John Cena down on his luck after losing to The Rock. Somehow the world knew about this. I wasn't reading the dirt sheets at the time. Brock Lesnar comes out at the end, and this literally changed the WWE because this became a box office attraction. This could be good or bad, but I look at it at the end of the day is this guy became a box office attraction. Every time he's been in a pay-per-view, the sales go up. Network subscriptions go up. Now, as a fan looking back at this almost 10 years later, some of these things, I love seeing Brock Lesnar, what he's done, but he also became a champion that ran away. We didn't see for months. Every time he comes back, somehow wins a championship. Squash Kofi, I'll never forgive him because it's his fault, not the script writing.
He came back again.
He basically to sell Saudi Arabia match against freaking Cain Velasquez. That is literally almost as forgotten as that Roman Reigns return.
He came back like 3 weeks ago.
Well, he did just come back. You're right. He's back again. But that one, nowhere near with this. This was
no.
After 8 years of a guy who hated wrestling as well, was done with WWE, went to UFC, went to New Japan, went to the NFL, and was the last cut before making it.
Took Sable.
Yeah, Sable. He took Sable. Actually, she returned at one point, too. That could have been on here. But just an outrageous of return and just that crowd that night after WrestleMania.
It's the moment, right? Because it's, you know, John Cena in the ring, and then you hear the music. You see Brock Lesnar. He does, like, the little chest bounce. Comes out.
He does a little dance.
Well, he does, but he also does the thing I love. He, like, bounces the pecs. Yeah. Which, if you can do that, like, the little...
I can't. I definitely like, can't.
Make
can
him dance. Cool moment. And he's the guy, you know, no Paul Heyman at the time. This was, you know, walk softly, carry a big stick, comes out to the ring, the goofy ass smile that he has, and F5 Cena. You know, it's just a perfect moment in wrestling history. I don't mind that it's our number one. I can't believe Triple H didn't make our list. Hilarious. But this is one of the all-time great wrestling returns. And it beat out the recency bias of CM Punk. But just go back and watch it. Like, there's signs in the crowd, like you said. Like, people remember. Like, people, this is the age of internet. People know this is happening. But, like, you can see it on both of their faces. Like, you can see the smile on Cena's face. You can see the smile on Brock's face, who doesn't even like wrestling. He's just there to literally to collect a paycheck. Yep. Nobody's better at it. He comes out, and it is electric.
Yeah, the thing about Brock, he literally feels like he's like a 13 or 14-year-old kid all the time. Like, even this late, recent return, he's smiling again. Because I think he's one of those guys that, like, yeah, he does it, it's a job. But then when you do that job and you're in front of thousands, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, like, something sparks right then, like, when you come out.
And this is the Brock Lesnar guy.
This is when the Brock Lesnar guy in that shirt. By the way, he and the guy Frank the Clown, who is Mick Foley's daughter's boyfriend or fiance, there's some weird wrestling fan stuff, like the backwards red cap guy who I
The wife beater guy.
I think he's technically known as Sign Guy. Well, no, the wife beater guy. That's your old school guy.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the guy in the blue button up that wears the red back cap. You see?
Oh yeah, that guy sucks. He's everywhere.
Yeah, and then we also used to know a guy known as CM Punk fan, but that was just a Boston thing.
Yeah.
That guy was a strange
guy. He was the worst.
He was really, and he smelled really bad. Yeah. Gave a really bad reputation to wrestling fans.
He also had like a bottle of like Fireball in his back pocket and carried around the women's champion. He was a weird dude.
Yeah. Odd times, but don't see him much anymore. But yeah, so Brock Lesnar, obviously just a momentous occasion, what it turned into, just outstanding stuff. So again, our top 11 for the best wrestling returns. Number 11, the Hardy Boys. Eric Bischoff at 10. Bret Hart at 9. Shawn Michaels in 2002 at 8. 7 is the Ultimate Warrior in 1992. 6 is Stone Cold from 2000 and 2003. 6A is Triple H at Madison Square Garden in 2002. 5 is Edge at 2020 Royal Rumble. 4 is Daniel Bryan in 2018. 3, John Cena at the Royal Rumble in 2008. CM Punk is number 2 recently at Rampage 2021 for AEW. And Brock Lesnar at number 1 in 2012. Bill, you said it. No qualms about this list except for maybe a little bit of stupidity from some people.
Triple H, one of the greatest, probably my favorite actual return, because I wasn't really too much into wrestling. I kind of had to go back and watch the Brock one in 2012, but right after that is when I fully got into wrestling. So, yeah, a decent list by us for once.
Math, incredible.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, Bill. Those guys. Oh, yeah. Make sure you search them on Spotify or wherever you're listening to music. I think I saw them on the Amazon Music because, you know, I love Amazon Music. It's free-ish.
Yeah, if you have Amazon Prime.
Who doesn't? You don't have Amazon Prime?
There was a person, you know, I bumped into not too long ago who didn't have Amazon Prime.
That's almost as rare as someone who doesn't like Daniel Bryan. Is it the same person?
No.
Feels like we're building a character here. Bill, what's coming out of your mind in music, movies, TVs? What are you watching?
The new Donda. The new Kanye West album. Huh? No. I actually really enjoyed this album. I know a lot of people hate it. And, you know, there's multiple reasons why people are going to tell you they didn't like it. One, they probably didn't listen to the whole thing, which most people didn't.
I don't like Kanye. I listen to it. Sounds like any other Kanye album to me. That could be a compliment or a disrespect, but it didn't stand out as any worse from the last few I've listened to. I'm not a Kanye fan. I'll just say that. But I don't think it deserves some of the hate I've seen, but I think that's just, we live in that world now.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Andre 3000, somebody posted a thing of him saying hip hop is not for older rappers because to be in hip hop, you need to be part of the word. You need to be hip. And if you're older, it doesn't really apply because, you know, there's different kinds of, you know, melodies or flows or, you know, lingo that you're not up on. And I think that's a little bit of him getting in his own head, because I listened to a podcast with him what's his name there? The guy who did the Yeezus album. He's done Rick Rubin. You know, Rick Rubin, you know, and him talked about like how he's afraid to make music. And I think it's okay. Like Eminem has been making music I don't want to listen to forever. But our guy Kevin says it's the best he's ever been, because he's making the music that he wants to. And I truly believe that Kanye is making the stuff that he wants. He didn't make any radio songs. I mean, I still firmly believe he could go out and make a huge banger of a hit, grab an old album, make a giant hook, and get people to listen to it. I think that he's trying to give you the world as he views it. And that's like, I think a lot of people are listening to songs for bops, for jams, which I do too. But I want to hear an artist that I truly love give me a perspective on the world as he sees it now. And I think that's kind of what Donda is. It's like it's not for children. You know, this is the adult tour. He doesn't really curse on the
album, right? I think that's what it is. Like a lot of these artists, like I think just using Eminem or even something, like I know Drake put out an album, but his album has been criticized by being maybe too safe.
That's my thing with Drake. He takes layups, whereas Kanye West, and, you know, I had an argument with, you know, Mac from the Mac and Goo podcast where I said, you can't create something great if you just do the same thing over and over again. It's these types of artists who push, you know, the genre, you know, artistry forward. And he said, it's usually a younger guy with a new take on it. And I do agree with that, but I'm not going to fault somebody for trying that. And I used to do that when Jack White would break out the piano instead of the guitar. I would get mad and be like, dude, you're the best guitarist in the world. Kanye is the best, I think, at making one of those kind of, you know, grab a song from the 70s and make, you know, something that you've like really haven't heard before famous. I think he's the best at that. But I don't, like, if he doesn't want to do that anymore, he's done that. You know what I mean? Like, I want him to do what he wants, because I feel like he is one of the most talented musicians, you know, creators of all time. He's got 23 Grammys. You really can't deny it. There's like 4 people who have more than him.
Grammys, for what it's worth. I get what you mean, though.
But even still, like he had 4 of the arguably greatest, you know, rap albums of all time. And to me, he's one of the greatest creators, and I want to hear his new stuff.
And listen, I can't disagree. I'm not a fan. Like I said, I listen to a lot of stuff I'm not necessarily a fan of, because listen, just because I don't like it doesn't mean I'm not open to the artist side. Did I like the album listening to? Not necessarily, but I think to your point, like if this is what he wants to create, go for it, dude. But I'm not going to come out and bash it either. That's not my thing. I just don't really like him. Like I think he's this.
He's insufferable for the most part, but I really like the way that he's still one of the most relevant figures in the world. And I want to hear it.
Well, you sure are right now. And as you said, there's a lot of some new music again, him and Drake, as we kind of went over
there. I listened to the Drake album. It's fine. Again, it's a Drake album. It's good. Every song has, you know, a Drake feel to it. He's not going outside of the box. He knows what he does well, and he sticks to it.
Now, what is Doc? I always forget. What's Doc's Twitter handle?
Backcracker.
That's what I thought. So at Backcracker, check out the tweet he put out where he took the album cover of
Drake. Oh yeah,
and he made it his. Absolutely hilarious. I can't even.
Certified Lover Boy, certified Backcracker.
I think it was like Fat Boy. It was hilarious. Yeah. I don't like the word fat, but it was hilarious the way he used it. So that's out there for some music. A couple things I've been watching. Now we'll give you a quick hit on the AEW, but this is the week of 9/11. It's coming up, 20 year anniversary, which is crazy. Which we could go over a few things for next week. We have some stuff we've talked about, but we'll talk about that off air. But that it is insane that I'll know it was 20 years ago, but they put National Geographic on Hulu. You can watch this. It is called A Day in America. I think it's an 8-part series, Bill. It is, if you want to dig into this, and if you're somebody who likes documentaries, and it's a little too real, for people of our generation, maybe a little bit older, a little bit younger, younger generation could probably watch it, no problem. But like, well, I shouldn't say no problem, but this is like the biggest impact our country's ever had, obviously terrorist attack, but like this thing is breathtaking for all the wrong reasons, but like so emotional, so sad, the stories, the footage. There's some footage I've never seen the first plane crash, never have seen it. I don't know if it's just maybe I missed it. I've watched tons of documentaries. Maybe it slipped my mind. There were several different views from random people that filmed things. It is, Bill, I'm telling you, it's worth the time. It is worth the emotional roller coaster. It's worth the reason to take some gummies before you go to bed. It is worth the then popping over to like a Rick and Morty, or I think you should leave after because you need to calm down, as me and my wife have done several times. But it is the best 9/11 documentary stuff I have watched, and it's hard to say that, but it is really hard but really great to watch, and so compelling, and some great heroic and super sad stories.
Yeah, our guy Mac said it on I think a news dump that, you know, it's odd to be fascinated by a topic like this, but it is a fascinating topic because he put it well. It's our JFK, right? It is the moment of our lifetime where you know exactly where you were when it happened, and you know, unfortunately, it'll always be an interesting moment in time because it just mattered so much to everyone.
Absolutely. And it's made an impact in the world. Look at just all the media. Look at the negativity we live in. A lot of things stem from there.
I'm flying this weekend. And my mom said, are you flying on the Saturday? I was like, no, I'm not. But even if I was, it's probably the safest day you could probably fly. You know, cross.
Knock on wood. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's just. It, one of those things that will be synonymous in your mind forever is 9/11 and, you know, 9/11. It is just, it's a piece of history that we lived. And typically those moments are, you know, like the JFK thing I said, like that is something that will stick with you forever. You'll tell your kids about it. You'll tell your grandkids about it. It's just one of those things. They'll ask you, you know, were you alive? Where were you? What was it like? So it was an odd time. I feel like the world was silent for like a month.
It was very strange. And the one weird thing that came out of that, and again, this could be something we discuss next week, media stuff, but we'll talk about it. But there was never a better sense of like togetherness than after that in our lifetime. And I don't know if anything, and I hope in a weird, well, I would love to have that community all of us together as Americans and not worrying about political parties and all that for a good while there, the rest of 2001.
And I believe SmackDown was the first public gathering. Everybody remembers the George Bush first pitch.
Yes.
Seed right down the plate.
Rocket.
a great first, probably the greatest first pitch of all time, regardless of your political standing. So it was just,
Time
stood still.
I always watch this. It's Lillian Garcia's.
America the Beautiful?
Bill, or National Anthem. I forget what it is.
No, I think they chose America the Beautiful. I think that was a conscious choice.
They always do that. That's like Vince's song. Mm. But whatever it was, but her, you know, for that first one, the crowd silent, crying. This, again, is the first no football games, basketball games, baseball games, hockey. Nothing was being played. The Friday night, they did a lot, or maybe on Thursday night, they had their first gathering. I believe it was in Texas. And my God, is it emotional. And, you know, definitely, you know, if you do check out Hulu or Nat Geo, wherever you get stuff from them, again, it's called One Day in America, 9/11. It is insanely captivating. And then just one last thing I have to mention, we've been talking all about wrestling. AEW this weekend, Bill, Adam Cole shows up back with the Elite, back a part of what was known as the Bullet Club, now is known as the Elite. Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, makes his AEW debut. Things are cooking over there. Even if some of these moments are going to kind of be like lost in the sauce, like CM Punk had a match, and I feel like no one's talking about that all of a sudden. There's just so much going on with AEW. They've gravitated, they've grabbed the fans of that have maybe been lapsed or frustrated with WWE, and they are just winning the internet war.
And you know how they did it? WWE style, buying up all the good guys.
But it's not even, see, here's the thing. It's a little, I don't even think they're buying them up.
Oh, they want to go there.
People, literally, Daniel Bryan, if you watch his promo, it's on the internet. He said he wanted to come here. He made the toughest decision. He has family. John Laurinaitis, who's the head of talent relations, is his father-in-law. He had to tell his father-in-law, sitting with him, probably in monthly meetings or just...
Oh, there's girlfriends and boyfriends in WWE, and their significant other is over there in AEW, and it's like, all right, you know,
not many anymore.
Yeah.
But
well, I think Charlotte Flair's not going anywhere for a while.
Not yet. You're right. And Zelina Vega, some reason, oddly came back to WWE while Malakai Black is at AEW. But yeah, it is just insane what is going on there, and the buzz, and the where is this going to go? And that's what's really key now for AEW. What do we get from all of these players? How do you balance this card? Because as someone who's a huge AEW, I'm just a wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. I don't poo on one. I have my criticisms of everything, but I'm so intrigued now. They have 3 hours of television. And obviously they have their
users. They're now legitimate. They are now a player. They now have a flag in the ground with some real people. And take a drink, our guy, JC of the Jobber Knocker, made the point, you know, how could WWE let all of these guys go? And he said, it's not always letting them go. Sometimes they leave. Sometimes they're like, no, right. Adam Cole probably saw the writing on the wall, said, you know, I'm never going to make it to the top of the heap here. Or if I do, it's going to be an Eddie Guerrero career-long journey to get there. So I'm going to go to a place where they value overall style and wrestling over, you know, the head of the table.
And a look, right?
And a look.
What you just said is dead on. And to JC to a degree, like Adam Cole made the decision. Daniel Bryan made the decision. CM Punk, obviously, it's a whole different story. Malakai Black was just let go. Andrade.
They didn't utilize him.
We'll see. Again, but this is it.
He is a guy that is the prototypical WWE top of the heap guy. Huge, impressive.
The entrance that he had, the captivation the WWE doesn't have entrances anymore like that. We don't have the epic entrances on a week-to-week show. AEW's learning to get there. But like that was something Aleister Black should have been headline, not even a headline, just like a attraction, just middle of the card, just slaying matches, him versus the Cesaros, the Buddy Murphys we saw, that could have carried on for years. They didn't see it. They turned him into a weird different character. Everything changed, but everything with it, everything's going AEW's way. People are overly critical of WWE right now. I think, and I hope as a wrestling fan, that this turns out best for both companies. I hope WWE steps up their game, because this is what we saw last time.
Yeah,
this
you happened. Have to.
25 years
level up. Competition breeds success. Two things I'll say real quickly. One wrestling related is if I'm them, I say this about every business. I say this, but Bill Belichick should do for years. Go and get the guy who drafts receivers for Pittsburgh or the second guy because they know how to do it. You don't. And AEW, go hire CFO because I know they're not making music anymore. Go get CFOs,
whoever.
Jim Johnson might be dead at this point.
No, he's still alive. All right. But we need.
But go get that production value because that is the only you have the top talent. They're cutting really good promos. Just get the other stuff that WWE is the best at.
Yes, production, certain production things, but I don't want them to be overproduced. I want like what I love about AEW, it doesn't feel like, oh, here's like the over big Tron. I know that's not what you're saying, but
no.
The music, we said this from day one.
That was the first thing. It's when you go into the archives and one of those crappy free websites or the one you pay like $200 subscription to. All right, rock sounds like Nirvana. Like the DDP intro that was basically Nirvana. Get a little bit out of that. And the last thing I'll say is another thing that I've been watching, Rick and Morty. Meh. Good.
Not doing it. I'm still only watched season one to this day. Oh, I just rewatch it.
Two and three are so good. Yeah, two and three are even as good, if not better. But I feel like they're hitting doubles. And it's not that they're not being – they're just doing this – like Dan Harmon was on Community, and they're just literally ripping the same exact – formula of a Community show here, an old Rick and Morty episode here. I just feel like they're being, I don't know, a little pretentious, a little safe. I'd like them to get out of the box. I can't wait for Harley Quinn to come back because, as I said before, I feel like that show is the best cartoon on TV. So, you know, heroes don't do that, but hopefully they figured out a way to work something in there. I'm sure they did.
Go deep diving, my friends. For the dorks, let's just hit it. They're all doing Shang-Chi.
Yep.
All of them did it. Haven't seen that movie. Interest level not super high. But is Marvel going to knock
it out? I mean, it is. It's one of the highest. I think it's the highest rated Rotten Tomato Marvel movie by critics and audience.
Really? Over Black Panther, huh?
I think so.
There goes the intrigue a little bit high. I do want to see it. Don't get me wrong.
I got to see Free Guy, too.
Yeah, that one doesn't get me as much. Obviously, I know it's going to be great because Ryan Reynolds is awesome. He doesn't really do bad projects. Yeah, so go check out Dork. They did theirs. CMC did their exit review. Mac and Goo did that. And what else? Mac and Goo, I thought I saw another pod come up.
I think he did a news dump. And then I think Mac is away again. I think they might. I forget what they're doing.
They did something else, didn't they?
1989 classic Aliens.
Oh, good one. I got to check that one out. I've been dying to hear them talk about that. But that's going to do it for us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Let us know. Follow him at BillyYee2411 over on Twitter and BillyD2411 across everything else, including that OnlyFans. I'm at Jason D. Rossi. We are at Pop Culture PD. Subscribe to the podcast. Let a friend know about it. Share this around. Let them know. Bash us for our list. Somebody forgot something. That never happened before. But appreciate you so much for listening. There's a lot of things you could be doing in life. The fact that you listen to our stupid voices in this dumb show means a hell of a lot to us. You enjoy your week. Be good to other people. And Bill, any final words for the fine folks?
Slap it on the biscuit.
Frank says hi.